episode of The Rule of Three. I'm Brian Miller, and on the other side of the mic, we've got Tim Slagle. Hey. And this is The Rule of Three. It's two comics, three topics, 10 minutes each, the perfect podcast for your modern lifestyle. We're going to be talking about some comedy news, a controversial firing in the comedy world, the Super Bowl is creeping up. We're going to find out which part of the Super Bowl Tim is really looking forward to. Spoiler alert, it's not the part you think.
Well, you know, if people know me, it might be the part that they think. That
that's true. The particulars of it, though, we'll call it, that's a tease for the second segment. But first, what we got this weekend was the inauguration. It was the big welcome committee, as it were. A lot of controversy right away, a lot of signings and stuff too. You know, it's been a busy weekend, there's just, no matter how many real policy decisions have gone on so far, there's one thing the president really seems to care about, and that is the reporting of the size of the crowds at the inauguration, which I think you and Andrew Lee both seem to be on Trump's side here, from what I've gathered via Twitter.
I'm not necessarily on his side. I'm just thinking, I can't believe this story has gone on as long as it has. It was, the inauguration was Friday, and it's now Tuesday, and it's still a news story.
I think it's possibly the single most important news story of the last 5 years. I do. I really mean that, and I'll tell you why. This is our Rosetta Stone. This is going to be the thing that you're going to need to be able to look back and point to, because the Trump administration is going to lie about so many things that are complicated and difficult and abstract. And it's going to be really important to point back to people and say, remember when there was a photo of a very obviously smaller crowd standing next to a very obviously bigger crowd, and they said our crowd was bigger. It's going to be important to have that fundamental lie that they will lie to you about something you can see so plainly. I think that's going to be, and I'll tell you what, I'll tell you, it's interesting to talk about these natural things. You know, I've heard some people say, like, oh, the media created the crowd size thing. Well, I happened to see the inauguration while I was sitting in studio doing AM 1130, doing some radio with Andrew and John and Republican Congressman, State Representative anyway, Nick Sirwise. And we were looking up at the TV was on in the background, and they had the inauguration shots. And Nick leaned in and said to me, holy smokes, doesn't that look empty? And then John said, wow, there's not a lot of people there. Right. So it wasn't
there is no question that there weren't a lot of people actually there physically. I think it's kind of disingenuous to compare it to Obama's first inauguration, because that is the largest, that is the best attended inauguration in history. There has never been more people in an inauguration than there was for Obama in 2009. So first of all, putting 2009 alongside this one is kind of disingenuous. And I was kind of surprised, actually, when I saw ABC News, the evening news, do that. It's, compared to this inauguration. And that was before Trump actually even started coming out and saying that it was the most watched ever. It was people were comparing, oh, look what happened in 2009 compared to what happened in 2017. You know, it's like, oh, he's so unpopular. Well, there's a couple things going here. Number one, it was raining. That kind of tends to cause attendance to drop off. Number two, there were supposed to be a lot of riots, and while there actually were small outbreaks of rioting, it was nowhere near as big as it was predicted. But people were threatening to burn the city down. I mean, why would you, if you were a Trump supporter, why would you willingly walk into that? So. There kind of was a motivated effort to scare people away from the inauguration in the first place.
How is it even after they won, we're talking about Trump supporters like they're victims? We're talking about Trump supporters like they're victims. We're talking about Trump like he's a victim. They won. They're the winners. I don't understand why they're still positioning themselves like the underdog. And what's also, you know, I agree with you, by the way, that the Obama inauguration was always going to be bigger. I mean, that was a particular occasion, you know, and it was, it's notable, but not super meaningful that there was that many more people for his than Trump's thing, whatever. However, I do think it's interesting that there were that many more people there the next day for the Women's March.
Well, yeah, because they thought Hillary was going to win. So they had already had their flights and hotel rooms booked, probably paid for the Airbnb
advance. No, I don't buy that at all. There was a huge march in Minneapolis, one of the biggest marches, actually, in St. Paul, with the Women's March. There was marches all over the world, especially over the country. They were huge.
I know, but we're talking about D.C.
We're talking
about D.C. If you want to talk about the women's marches all over the world, yeah, is Hillary had a heck of an email list and people that wanted Hillary to win. You don't think that was organized? You really believe that those marches were spontaneous?
Well, I mean, every march is organized. There are organizers. The notion that a march isn't legitimate if people don't all spontaneously of their own accord somehow wind up being in the exact same place at the exact same time is a different thing. But I mean, I know so many people who went who are not on Hillary's email list. People just went. It is just a fact that Donald Trump is the single least popular president in the history of the United States of America upon being elected. Lincoln. I mean, of course, the argument with Lincoln
I don't know how far back they actually checked presidential popularity before inauguration. I don't know how far back that really goes. Is that in modern history, goes back to Clinton, is that he is the least popular since Clinton.
And I think, by the way, I'll say this.
Or Reagan.
In fairness.
Probably a Reagan. But I don't even know if they. I don't even know if they did. I don't even know if that was a metric that they polled back then.
Sure. And some of these are. It's like sports stats that they didn't keep back then. You know, the yards after the catch or something. And they're like, yeah, well, they didn't do that for Lynn Swan, so it didn't matter. But I will say, I think Hillary would have been pretty darn low herself if she would have won. I don't think she would have been waltzing into the office at 55% or anything like that. By any stretch.
It was a very polarized election. And here, as we're getting closer to the end, I want to get this out.
Sure.
Here's why I think it probably shouldn't matter as much as it is mattering, because I think Trump is just playing the media. I think that he wants the media to obsess over this irrelevant statistic. It's the same tactic that the Clintons used, saying that to lie, and then when they were caught in the lie, said, well, that's just a vast right-wing conspiracy. Hillary was able to use that tactic for a good 20 years. And I think what the Trump administration is doing is setting up the same polarization within the media, is that he wants his supporters to think that the media are lying about them. And by doing so, he is discrediting the mainstream media. And the longer the media obsesses about this, the further that they pull into his trap.
I actually agree with that almost 100%. The only thing I disagree with is that I think he absolutely the most cares about crowd size. He can only conceive of the world in terms of ratings. I mean, every time he talks about anything, he talks about it like it's a showbiz program. It's the way his brain works. And I actually read a pretty thoroughly sourced article at the Washington Post about him just being absolutely livid in the White House, just being enraged by the whole thing, and just being off his rocker about it. And that's why one of the reasons allegedly Spicer looked so flustered in that first thing was that Spicer didn't want to go out there and say any of that crap.
There is a chance that that's correct. There is a chance that what you're saying is
absolutely
true. But
both things can be
true,
though, I will say. You know, he can be mad, and it can be a very successful. I think you hit it on the nail on the head in terms of his primary strategy is to make people so distrust the media that there's nothing the media can say that has an effect. And that is going to be a really tricky thing to work around.
Yep.
Yeah, 100% agree on that one.
And another tricky thing to work around
ooh,
is the 10-minute limit.
Good segue. You never really died, but a million redneck women, they still cried and cried.
back on the Rule of Three. We're going to be talking about something that happened over at Saturday Night Live this week. But right now, of course, everyone's gearing up. We know who the players are going to be. We know that it's going to be Atlanta versus New England. I mean, that's been decided this weekend. And personally, I don't care.
Although it is interesting that we're basically refighting the Civil War.
That is a good point. I'll be honest. I really don't care much about football. I'll watch a game if it's important. If it's the home team, which I'm not even sure who my home team is actually.
Yeah, I say, would you be a Lions guy or a Bears guy?
Yeah, I don't know. It is I grew up in Detroit. I moved to Chicago in 1986. I have actually spent a lot of time in the Twin Cities, and I did a lot of bar gigs in Wisconsin. So.
Wow, you basically got the whole NFC North covered.
Yeah,
you're exactly. A fan of the NFC North.
Exactly. So who I'm a fan of? Usually, I am a Zelig. I am a Zelig of the NFC North.
Well, the real answer for most comics, and it's the best answer, is I'm a fan of whichever team is not going to somehow wind up playing a Saturday or Thursday night home game in the town I'm in during my show.
Oh my God! You should have. You could have not been more disappointed to be a comic working in Chicago the last week of October.
Oh yeah, it was like ruined show after ruined show. Absolutely,
yeah. It was not a good week for comedy. So yes, you're absolutely right there. I've done a shtick. I actually have a Packers jersey,
mm-hmm.
And I've done a shtick where I put on a blazer over the Packers jersey, and go on and say I love working in Wisconsin, and I really love working in Wisconsin, and I know every comic says that, and I'm not the kind of person that would just, and as I'm saying this, I slowly take off my blazer and say I'm not the person that would just do something like that to suck up to a crowd. And then I reveal that I'm wearing a Packers jersey, and the audience always goes nuts.
So you're not much of a sport. You're just not a sports guy for the most part. Do you have a favorite sport?
No.
You're just sort of disinterested. I kind of don't blame you. I'm pretty dialed out of everything but football, really.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't care, but I always watch the Super Bowl.
Right, and what's interesting, by the way, I love football. I don't really care about the Super Bowl. For the same reasons that you do care about it, I think, which is for me, not enough football.
Part of the reason is, and I will admit, I really love wings and
that's a good
seven
answer.
Layer and seven layer dip.
Oh, the Super Bowl is a terrific excuse for a party, because it's like a low stakes party on a night that, you know, January we could all use a little fun, you know, or beginning of February. And there's no pressure. You don't have to buy any gifts for anybody. You just got to bring a bottle of booze or, like you said, bring a dip. And you got yourself a Sunday shindig.
Yeah. And what's really funny to me is that it's kind of become like a second Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm.
In the effect that, A, it's an American holiday. B, it has the menu prepared. Just like Thanksgiving, you know what's going to be on the table. You know it's going to be turkey and stuffing and mashed potatoes and sweet potatoes. And, you know, the menu's pretty much prepared. People don't stray from the Thanksgiving menu very far. And the Super Bowl has a menu. I mean, there is, it is avocados. It is the most avocados consumed in the United States in one day is on Super Bowl. So the avocado has kind of been the January turkey, so to speak.
Also, much like Thanksgiving, the Redskins might be there, but probably not for long. I was just hanging there. As long as they have a crazy racist team name hanging out there, I got to make a joke about it. But no, I think you're right, though.
Then I was also thinking the Chiefs, which by the way, is also can be considered a slur for Native Americans.
Oh, yeah. I mean, put it this way. Call a Native American guy Chief and see how it goes. It ain't going to be good. But no, it's interesting. You're right. If you went to a Super Bowl party and they didn't have dip and pizza and wings, you'd be like, what the hell kind of Super Bowl party is this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same thing. But I watch. I love the halftime show.
That's very interesting to me.
For me, it's such a wonderful piece of Americana. And I have to say is that my favorite in recent years has to have been Katy Perry.
She's riding that big lion.
Well, the only time the lion will ever be in the Super Bowl, Kadoom Chop.
Yeah, I think Astaki and I might have done that joke, actually.
Everybody did that joke.
Yeah, exactly. Didn't stop Astaki and I.
I was watching Katy Perry and I said, you know, there's probably never been a more perfect Super Bowl halftime act. I mean, she kind of is America's cheerleader.
Yeah. She's foxy. I'm sort of biased.
Pardon?
I'm sort of biased. She's real foxy. I have kind of a Katy Perry crush.
Yeah, that's what I mean. She's like a cheerleader. She's the crush that all the guys have a crush on. And the camp, I'm sorry, the Dancing Sharks got a lot of grief. I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, I still think that one shark was intentionally dancing weirdly just to get people to talk about it. I still think that was a genuine meme conspiracy. I mean, not a conspiracy. They were just like, oh, let's have a weird thing, and then everyone will talk about it. And then they did. You know? Success.
It's But
you're excited for Gaga, yeah?
Yeah, I'm Gaga over Gaga. I've been a big fan of Lady Gaga for a while. I've kind of been embarrassed to say. I don't care much for her music. But I really get a kick out of the image, the image that she's created, and what I really delight in is the fact that she's actually been able to reinvent herself. I mean, that's something that Madonna's been given credit for far too long. I mean, everyone, you know, when you talk about Madonna, oh yeah, she's reinvented herself over and over, and you know, not really, she just changes bras.
I don't know. I think to me, Lady Gaga is literally almost a Madonna clone. And her music sounds like Madonna's.
No. I agree. I agree. However, what I was saying is that she actually did reinvent herself.
I'm not as familiar with Gaga.
She's actually kind of turning herself from the Madonna kind of over the top. Mm-hmm. I think she's kind of realized that it's a crowded field, you know. Mm-hmm. You still got Katy Perry kind of going over the top. You've got Miley Cyrus going way over the top.
Yeah, that's true.
And that she's realized that there's really no sense in doing this anymore. So that she's actually kind of turned herself into a lounge singer.
Oh yeah, she does the Tony Bennett stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah, she did the Tony Bennett stuff. She did a Barnes & Noble commercial doing the Christmas rape song with him.
Is that how they wrote it on the track listing?
I don't know. That's what it became last year. And then last year at the Super Bowl, she actually just came out in a suit. Huh. And the most ridiculous thing was her glitter eyeshadow matched her suit.
So she's going to be at two Super Bowls in a row?
Yeah, well, she got such good response in the first one is that they said, yeah, why don't we give her, you know, I think they were worried about what she might do.
Mm.
And so they're giving her a chance. But here's the most interesting thing is she's doing it for free.
Huh. Why is that, I wonder?
Because she's a businesswoman and she realizes that every star who's ever been in the Super Bowl has had a bump.
Oh yeah, I mean that's the obvious reason. There's not like some I'm doing it for the children of wherever the stand or whatever. I mean, she's literally just doing it as a promotional thing.
Yeah, her attitude is, you know, if you give me 30 minutes, you know, 30 seconds on the Super Bowl, you've given me $2 million
or 5 now. 30-second Super Bowl adds up to $5 million, last I heard.
$5 million. Okay, so that's worth $5 million if you let me sing for 30 seconds.
That's true. So if you give her 10 minutes, woo.
Yeah, why should you have to pay me on top of that?
Although, as a comedian, I do not like this, because this is exactly the sort of logic that gets bookers to lower our rates.
I think we better stop right now.
Yeah, look my best in my party dress and pretend I like the halftime show. Now I got a purpose. Thank God for the Super Bowl.
And on the final segment of Rule of Three, there was a big comedy business move that made some news the other day. It doesn't happen that often, but a writer named Katie Rich, who writes for Saturday Night Live, who I was, I think, very vaguely familiar with via Twitter. Her name sounds just a tickle familiar, but she's not a big name by any stretch of the imagination. She's, you know, Saturday Night Live has many writers. She's a successful working
writer. Most of the writers there, yeah, are pretty anonymous.
And, yeah, I mean, sometimes people will go on to be big. You know, John Mulaney was a writer for them, and, you know, Robert Smigel. Uh-huh. But yeah, they have a, you know, I think people who don't necessarily watch the credits of shows realize just how many writers they have at SNL.
Right.
It's a big crew.
And after some episodes of the show, you realize they're anonymous for a good reason.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily a big SNL fan, but so the Katie Rich, who's a writer for Saturday Night Live, has been indefinitely suspended for a joke that she tweeted about. The exact joke, I'll quote it. The joke was that I believe Barron Trump is going to be the first homeschool shooter.
Huh.
That was the joke. I got to say, in terms of a joke, I'd put it on a funny scale. I'd put it at a 3.
Really?
Yeah.
I think that's a funny joke.
Really? I don't think the joke's that funny, but I think it's completely absurd that she is being has been suspended indefinitely for tweeting that joke.
Yeah. It's kind of false bravado for SNL to do that. It's because they're sometimes so vicious with their comedy about certain figures to actually fire someone because they did something on their private Twitter account.
Right, it's not like she sprinted onto the stage during a show and yelled out something, soy bomb style or whatever, you know?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's her private Twitter account. But what's more important, I think, is that what are we coming to that someone gets fired for a joke writer gets fired for a joke?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a crazy one-to-one ratio. I saw someone else on Twitter make a point that I completely agree with. They said, look, if Lester Holt would have tweeted that, yeah, you should probably suspend Lester Holt, you know, CBS newsman or whatever. But she's a writer for an irreverent politically, you know, that's the other thing is like, what, Saturday Night Live is going to pretend they don't have a political agenda? Please. You have a joke writer tweeting. I mean, by the same logic, you're like, well, what if one of the Saturday Night Live writers wrote an R-rated movie and they have dirty jokes in their R-rated movie? You know, is this supposed to be G-rated Happy Land?
Well, I think it's exactly what you, I think you just hit on the reason why she was let go right there. And I think the reason is we all know that SNL has a bias. We all know that they have a political bias. So this is their ability to say, to actually claim neutrality.
Ah, a little scapegoat action, a little sacrificial lamb.
Yeah, that's exactly what that is. It's like, oh, yeah, we're vicious. We're cruel with Donald Trump. But when someone crosses the line, well, you know, there's no, we don't have bias. It's, you know, it would have been just as wrong to do that, to say something like that about Sasha or Malia. It's, you know, we're going to have the first private school shooting, you know. It's, oh, we wouldn't have tolerated that either, so.
Right. Or the famous, yeah. You know, what immediately sprang to my mind was Mike Myers calling Chelsea Clinton a dog on a Wayne's World sketch, and then Bill Clinton demanding that Mike Myers call Chelsea Clinton and apologize to her personally.
I don't did that happen?
It's in Tom Shale's SNL book. And what's interesting about it is it's funny because it made me think of that. Because I'm like, yeah, you know, maybe making fun of the presidential kids is kind of gross. And I'm not, I certainly don't think anyone should be fired for it, but I'm not inclined to bring the kids into it. I just think it's a little skeezy. But I will say, it did make me think, like, the Barron Trump thing bothers me slightly less, only because this, he's a little baby. He's not on Twitter. He doesn't know. You know, like, if you call a 14-year-old girl ugly, like, she sees that, and she has to go to school the next day. You know, I'm not – morally, it's probably not that different. But practically, that one is like, okay, that's kind of mean. But again, nobody got fired for writing that Mike Myers joke. And Mike Myers certainly didn't get fired. An apology is one thing, you know, versus a
– That's actually interesting. Was it so Mike Myers had to call and apologize?
Uh-huh. He talks about it in the SNL book, and he talks about how bad he felt. That, like, he says, you know, I haven't read the book in a while. I'm not trying to misquote him, but he says something to the effect of, like, he calls this really awkward, shy, nervous girl, and he kind of realizes, like, oh man, that was like a person. And can you imagine when you were 14 if someone called you ugly on NBC? You know, like.
Well, what's interesting to me, and I was not aware of this story. What's a couple points that are interesting to me is number one. It was Mike Myers and not his writer. Did Mike Myers actually write that line?
I don't know. I don't know. He might have. He might. You know. I have no idea about that.
Yeah. So. I mean, are the actors supposed to say, "Oh, I can't read this line"? Yeah, I mean, is that what it is?
I think it's possible he wrote his own. You know, he wrote some of his own sketches.
No, it is possible. No, it's absolutely possible. But I'm just. I'm just curious. No,
that's an interesting point.
Number two, if I had to apologize to Chelsea Clinton, I'd have no idea how to get a hold of her. It's kind of interesting that Mike Myers actually had the ability to get a hold of Chelsea Clinton.
I think it was arranged. The strings.
Oh, of course it was, but it's just to actually think of the strings that had to be pulled and the amount of people that had to agree with this for it to occur.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think it was a thing. It was, yeah, absolutely. It was definitely Bill Clinton yelling to an aide who yelled at a guy who called a guy who called Lorne Michaels who called Mike Myers.
Right. And then it all the way went back. It was, Mike Myers will call and apologize. So he said, okay, yeah, can I have the number? Yeah. Blah, 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 all the way back. And it's, there's a really good chance as well. That might have been a highlight of Chelsea Clinton's year was she got a phone call from Mike Myers.
I don't think so. I don't think after someone calls you ugly on TV when you're 14.
I don't know.
But here's an interesting side point to this Katie Rich firing, which is completely absurd. Like you said, you fired a joke writer for writing a joke on her private time. What do you want? What's been interesting is I put a couple of things on Twitter about it, made a joke or two of my own and kind of expressed my general, you know, disdain for the whole thing. And, a bunch of comics were like, yeah, man, you're right on. And some of the people that were very enthusiastically patting me on the back for my stance are some of the same people that just a few months ago were trying to make a Minneapolis comic an outcast for a joke that he made that they didn't think was appropriate on Twitter. And I don't want to out the guy because I don't want to give him any.
No. I don't remember the incident. What was the joke?
You know, it's funny. I don't remember the joke myself. But I do remember this. I heard the controversy, and then I asked the guy the joke, and I had basically the exact same reaction to his joke as I did to this Katie Rich joke, which is, you know, I didn't think either of them were great jokes. Both of them were just clearly jokes, you know, clearly you could see the craftsmanship of the joke at work in the back. And in both cases, I went, well, I don't like the joke, but yeah, they can say that. Are you kidding me?
I think she should have rather than fired. Is she actually been fired or is she just on suspension?
Indefinite suspension.
Okay.
But what was interesting is this comic in particular, it was like a glass ceiling joke or something. His joke is from a more conservative perspective.
Okay.
And that's what's interesting to me is that
I remember now.
I am very much – I'm of the – it bothers me when anyone on either side involved in the comedy business will defend They'll say, oh, you shouldn't be able to fire Katie Rich, but we should be able to blacklist this guy. Or, you know, we can't fire Katie Rich or whatever, you know, like that. It's no, it's you, you got
to
be able to make
the
jokes.
I would have been happy if Katie Rich had to call Barron.
he's like toodaloo. He's like gooing in the background and licking a rattle or something.
Have you seen the Robert Smigel Barron Trump piece?
No.
Oh, you got to Google it. It's on the Triumph Network.
Yeah, I did see his trolling the Trump supporters was pretty funny at the inauguration.
No, basically what he did was he hired a lookalike to play Barron Trump and staged a book signing in Ohio, and then gave this kid Triumph style insults.
Oh, that's really funny
to use on the supporters. Yeah, it's something it should be Googled.
That out. That's really funny, but.
And our listeners can check that out too. Now that the podcast is coming to its conclusion, all these episodes, of course, are timslegel.com or on iTunes.
Yep, and at brianmillercomedy.com, and then at realbrianmiller spelled with a Y on Twitter.
And we'll see you next week.